Morning. Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 16th, 2020, and the time is about 9:05 a.m. We are meeting the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Von Imhoff, and I'm joined today by Senator Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman. It is a full house. It's good to have everybody here. We do have a quorum to do business. The only item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 134, an act relating to the medical assistance reimbursement for the services of licensed professional counselors and providing for an effective date. This is our first hearing on the bill. I would like to invite Senator David Wilson and his staff, Gary Zepp, to present the bill. And I believe we have a PowerPoint presentation as well.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Finance Committee. For the record, Senator David Wilson, District D. Senate Bill 134 before us is a Medicaid coverage for licensed professional counselors. If enacted, this bill would allow those licensed professional counselors to list independently licensed practitioners to address the shortage of the Medicaid-eligible behavioral health providers in our great state of Alaska, to afford more options for beneficiaries, increase access, and improve the quality of care at a lower cost for behavioral health. Currently, licensed professional counselors, and we'll abbreviate for LPCs, are only allowed to provide services in community clinics or physician mental health clinics with limits to willing providers. SB 134 expands those medical assisted reimbursement services to cover those provided directly by LPCs. Specifically, 134 adds professional counselors to the list of Medicaid optional services under AS 4707. .30B defines professional counseling services licensed under AS 0908.29 and authorizes professional counsel services to eligible to bill Medicaid funded services independent practitioners under statutes 4707.30B and requests the Department of Health and Social Services to amend the state plan under the Social Security Act. With that, we encourage your support, and we'll go through a brief presentation by our trustee, my trustee aide, Mr. Gary Zepp.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Madam Chair, could I have a brief recess?
We'll have a brief at ease.
At ease.
Thank you. We are back online, and we now have our notes and our slide deck and everything that we need. So, Mr. Zepp, when you are ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies again for the delay in the committee. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Gary Zepp, Senate Finance Staff to Senator David Wilson. This morning, we will be presenting Senate Bill 134, adding licensed professional counselors to Medicaid optional services. The concept is to add additional capacity and utilization of behavioral health care in a clinical setting versus a state of crisis in our emergency rooms within Alaska. The expansion of health care is projected to reduce wait times, improve the quality of care by providing the appropriate care by the appropriate health care professional, and will cost less than the behavioral health care in our emergency rooms across our state. In conversations with our stakeholders, we've heard about wait times for services like alcohol and or drug abuse, suicide, depression, trauma from violence, serious mental illness, wait times of anywhere from 3 to 6 months for Medicaid clients. This is due to a workforce shortage of behavioral health care professionals available to see Medicaid clients. And I think we've all seen examples of behavioral health care shortages that are revealed to us in our daily lives through the stories in the media, what you may see, and what you may have experienced or witnessed in your own communities. Licensed professional counselors are a valuable, cost-effective part of treatment for behavioral health care. This proposed legislation is a piece of the behavioral health care puzzle that already includes licensed social workers, PhD psychologists, prescribing nurse practitioners, marital and family therapists, and medical doctors like psychiatrists and primary care physicians. There's approximately 717 active licensed professional counselors in Alaska currently. Many people are familiar with the term mental health. Mental health covers many of the same issues as behavioral health, but this term only encompasses the biological component of the aspect of wellness. Behavioral health is a scientific study of emotions, behaviors, and biology related to a person's mental well-being, their ability to function in everyday life, and their concept of self. A person struggling with his or her behavioral health may face stress, depression, anxiety, relationship problems, grief, addiction, mood orders, or other psychological concerns. Counselors, therapists, life coaches, psychologists, nurse practitioners, or physicians can help manage behavioral health concerns with treatment, such as therapy, counseling, and or medication. Why Medicaid clients and who are they? Medicaid provides health coverage and long-term care services for Alaska's most vulnerable: children, seniors, people with disabilities, pregnant women, and very low income or working poor. Medicaid clients have difficulties finding access to behavioral health care and often have to wait for appointments. So you can imagine a person in crisis or someone who is ready to accept behavioral health care services and there isn't any access, or they're told they have to wait 3 or 4 months. So what are their options? Alaska's emergency rooms. Senate Bill 134 would directly impact the lives of our most vulnerable population of citizens, our poor, our young, and our seniors. Alaska's emergency rooms have been overwhelmed with volumes of Medicaid clients in emergency situations in need of behavioral health. The leading cause of emergency room visits are related to alcohol disorders and the associated ailments of alcohol abuse. And often, Medicaid clients have nowhere else to go due to the lack of access and the lack of capacity, which causes two problems. One, patients stay longer in hospitals than they should. And typically, if a Medicaid client is in a stage of crisis and there is not access to the appropriate care immediately, they leave the facility and the cycle repeats itself. They will be back at the emergency room because they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So, Mr. Zepp.
Yes, ma'am.
So I see why you bring up Medicaid because of the recent 115 waiver, and I understand that the purpose of this bill is to expand access to healthcare providers for this particular population. Can you comment on private insurers, as in Blue Cross is what we have in the state now, and then I think Aetna through Alaska Care? do those two insurance and populations that they represent have access to a wider pool of healthcare providers, particularly for mental health as well? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I do not know the specific coverage for the private insurance for behavioral health. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah, I could get back to you on that.
If you could do a little research and let us know whether private insurers already allow this type of wider net, I think would be really helpful.
I do know, I was just going to make one comment. I do know through the, I believe it's the General Government Bargaining Unit, they have an employee assistance program that does cover counseling and various services. I do know that for sure, but I will follow up with you.
Okay. Senator Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe one of our invited testifiers might be able to answer that as well. But we do have, generally, private insurance does cover a set number of treatments, either 8 to 10 weeks of behavioral health type of therapies and mental health therapy appointments through various different type of providers, as long as those things are pre-approved. As the normal standard is about 8 to 12 weeks of standard of care.
As long as it's pre-approved?
Sometimes it depends on the provider and the provider type and the and your insurer. But the state of Alaska, our health insurance for state employees does cover behavioral health and mental health services.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Please continue.
The next few slides reflect some of the statistics concerning the lack of behavioral health care, both nationally and within Alaska. I'll just read a few of the brief highlights. Approximately 70% of Americans who need behavioral health services do not receive treatment. For substance use disorders, it's about 92%. And adults with serious mental health issues, approximately 66%, do not receive behavioral health treatment. Without treatment in a timely manner, this can often lead to interactions with the police, the court systems, and the correctional facilities within our state. And according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, approximately 51.4% of prisoners have a serious psychological distress and or a history of mental health problems. 20% of those are considered severely and persistently mentally ill. As you can see, children are very much susceptible to behavioral health issues. Common behavioral health issues that our children experience are depression, anxiety, behavioral disorders, and the most common is the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. A child diagnosed with depression has approximately a 74% chance of having a co-disorder like anxiety. If a child is diagnosed with depression and anxiety disorders, and if not treated, they usually increase over time and the child's behavior health condition worses. Boys are more likely than girls to have a mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder, and children living below the poverty line have a 22% more likelihood of a mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder. And Senate Bill 34 can expand that capacity of behavioral health care in our schools, our communities, and our health care facilities. Mental disorders among children can cause serious changes in the way children typically learn, behave, or handle their emotions, which causes distress and problems throughout the day. This is absolutely tragic, and I know you've heard this study, these statistics before, but according to the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, the Alaska Bureau of Vital Statistics, and the State of Alaska Office of Epidemiology, Alaska has the highest rate of suicide per capita in the country. In Alaska, suicide is the number one leading cause of death for ages 10 through 64. Our suicide rate is 21.8 suicides per 100,000 people, and for rural Alaska, it's 35.1. There was a 13% increase in suicides between 2013 and 2017 as compared to the previous five-year period of 2007-2011. And unfortunately, the toxicology results following suicide since 2015 show 70% involved one or more substances, most frequently alcohol. More than 90% of people who die by suicide have depression or diagnosable, treatable mental or substance abuse disorders. Later in our presentation, the expert testimony will be able to shed light on the workforce shortage of behavioral health care professionals that are available to treat Medicaid clients and Alaskans in general. The 2016 Alaska Behavioral Health Systems Assessment Report estimated 145,790 Alaska adults, roughly 20% of the population, are in need of behavioral health services. Despite the estimated need for a mental health care in Alaska, the ratio of mental health providers to population is low compared to national averages. And additionally, most behavioral health professionals work in urban areas, Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Mat-Su. Such as the remote areas of the state have even lower provider population ratios. The chart above reflects the total cost that the state of Alaska has paid to emergency rooms for Medicaid clients throughout our state over the previous 4 years. As you can see, in 2016, the total cost was $233 million plus, and that amount has risen over the last four by $47.1 million, or 20.1%. As an example, in 2019, the top 2.9% of super utilizers, which means they had more than five visits per year, per calendar year, consumed 16.3% of the charges at $46 million. That's 1,301 clients at an average cost of $35,357. Some had 10 visits or more, some as much as 50 visits or more. If we count the top 10.03% of the super utilizers, we're talking about 6,250 Medicaid clients, that costs $114 million, or 40.6% of the total charges annually. And again, that's 6,250 clients at an average annual cost of $18,240. Costs are rising at an unsustainable rate, and we have to do something different to stop this trend. We need to improve Medicaid programs and provide increased quality and become more cost efficient. We believe, and other healthcare providers in Alaska agree, by adding more licensed professional counselors, we have a chance to improve these outcomes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mikulski.
Yeah, thank you. Is this all Medicaid clients, or is this behavioral health?
This is all Medicaid, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. This is all Medicaid clients.
Thank you.
Any follow-up, Senator Wilkowski?
I'm just curious if there a way to break that down into behavioral health and non-behavioral health?
Do you know? Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I have what's called a super utilizer report, and I believe that might be part of your packet. And they look like this. These. And this breaks down the Medicaid clients by category, by service codes, and some other demographics.
So I think Senator Bishop has a question as well, and Senator Wilkowski, we can go back to you. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zepp, I wasn't quick enough. The super utilizer facts, that's five or more visits per year?
Per calendar, through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's correct.
Thank you.
Do you have any of this information on your slide deck, or is this just the appendix handout on the super utilizers?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I didn't get it.
Do you have a slide? Do you have a slide on the super utilizers, other than?
I don't have one specifically that reflects the Alaska Medicaid, or through the chair, or excuse me, Madam Co-Chair. I don't have a slide specifically that shows the Alaska Medicaid facts and figures that I get from the consultant through Department of Health and Social Services. I've put together several graphs and things to kind of summarize those issues.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
And I can just point out for the public at home, and I guess for the committee, that it doesn't have a page number on it, but it looks like maybe the fifth page in, it does list the top 2.7% patients with more than 10 visits, and the number one by far is alcohol abuse with intoxication, 2,331 visit counts. And the second one is alcohol dependence with withdrawal, unspecified, and that's 1,053. And then the next one is chest pain, which is 783. So alcohol accounts for the vast, vast majority of this alcohol abuse.
So thank you, Senator Wilkowski. So one of the questions we heard today in Department of Corrections also, and I'm just going to kind of go on a tangent, is that several people sometimes are picked up and have to sleep it off. Do we need, I'm just putting it out there, sleep off centers? Would this help? On one hand, during your research, you have discovered the need to open access for mental health, but then you put this piece of paper together that shows 2,000 plus almost 3,500 people have alcohol withdrawal or alcohol intoxication as part of their super utilizers. Do you have any comments on that?
Senator Wilson, for the record. Madam Chair, this bill is trying to address some of the larger issues, not necessarily all the super medical, not all the super utilizers will fall under this bill for LPCs, but take, for example, one large hospital in Anchorage. They had over 220, and we have another slide to go through this, but they had over 220 sort of assessments at their ER that they had to bill at a $4,000 rate instead of an LPC, which is around $200 a billing rate. We have our hospital in the Mat-Su. They have someone there who they have beds available, but they can't bill for the services, and so you have beds that aren't totally utilized because you have no one that can bill for them because we have a provider shortage. So we're trying to solve the provider shortage and allow more accessibility for these people to be monitored, to be counseled, and to be able to provide these services and be able to allow those entities to recoup some of the costs that they are that they're seeing because of the high need of behavioral health services within our state.
Okay. Thank you.
As I was stating before about the, we believe, and other healthcare providers in Alaska agree, by adding more LPC counseling services, we do have a chance to improve these outcomes. And with the federal approval of the state's 1115 waiver for behavioral healthcare services, and by adding LPCs to the mix of behavioral healthcare professionals, it offers an opportunity to expand capacity, increase the quality of care, and lower the costs versus the crisis mode at the platinum level cost that the state is already paying.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Yeah, thank you. And at the beginning, you made a point of saying that there's a difference between behavioral health and mental health. And the LPCs that would be hired, would they be dealing with alcohol-related issues, since that seems to be an overwhelming number of these people who are going to the emergency room?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's correct. If I could just make a brief note about Senate Bill 105, which was passed in 2018, that included the licensed marital and family therapists. They can also treat substance abuse as well.
And I'll just point out, if I could, when I read those numbers before that, with the alcohol abuse with intoxication, that being 2,531 patient visits, that was actually the 2018 number. There's actually a couple pages later in that same document of 2019 where alcohol abuse with intoxication is still the leading one, that 1,608, although it does appear there's been a fairly significant drop. It still is the leading cause of patient visits.
The chart above shows the number of Medicaid clients in our emergency rooms has not increased, but the costs have. And we'll let the experts from our friends in Department of Health and Social Services comment on the statistics as far as the lesser clients since 2016. And as Senator Wilikowski said, the most common diagnosis for the top 2.7 super utilizers are alcohol-related disorders and the associated ailments. The top 2.7% of super utilizers are likely to be between 20 and 59 years old, and 61% are females, and 39% are males. The good news, however, is since the passage of Senate Bill 105, which added the licensed marital and family therapist to the Medicaid optional services, several additional programs aimed at diverting Medicaid clients from emergency rooms into more comprehensive coordinated care models are in practice right now. As you'll hear from Mr. Jared Kosin, the president and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, and hopefully from the Mat-Su Health Foundation ladies, Ms. Elizabeth Ripley and Robin Menard, These programs are diverting super utilizers from our emergency rooms in Alaska to a clinical or coordinated care setting, and that does save money. These are two examples that are working in Alaska right now and achieving significant results. And most importantly, the Medicaid clients are receiving improved quality of service by the appropriate healthcare professionals at a substantially reduced cost. This saves the Medicaid program money. By adding capacity with the licensed professional counselors to assist with behavioral healthcare issues, this enhances those programs as well as other private practice clinical settings too. We did want to touch on the fiscal note from our friends at the Department of Health and Social Services, and it's understood they have to provide estimates of what programmatic changes cost that they believe will happen, but we believe there's more to the story. And I think as, again, this is just a rough estimation. As you can see, in 2019, there was over 62,000 Medicaid clients that visited the emergency room. And the fiscal note references 20% of the Medicaid population will go see a licensed professional counselor. So as a rough estimate, we took 20% of those clients, equals 12,000 plus clients. The current cost of emergency room visits for those 12,000 plus clients is at about $4,360 for a behavioral health assessment. That's about $54 million plus. The current average cost of an LPC clinical visit, licensed professional counselor, sorry, the same 12,457 clients times an average of $200 is about $2.5 million. And again, the difference is over $51 million, and we are not saying that this is what you're going to save, but you can clearly see the potential savings of diverting Medicaid clients from the emergency room in a crisis stage at a platinum cost to a preventative clinical setting with a licensed professional counselor.
And Madam Chair, I'll just add that we have hospitals, even Manelik and Kotzebue, they've talked about they would love to hire a licensed professional counselor. They could have one in their ER. Providence would love to have one in their ER 24/7 to help divert folks from overutilizing their ERs and divert those beds, because they normally have to provide sometimes one-to-one counseling, and so they can use the LPCs to basically do triage for the behavioral health need to see whether or not they need to go to a higher level of care, or that could be managed more of an outpatient type of setting. So even if they still go to the ER, we have hospitals that are willing to use LPCs to help divert some of the crisis needs instead of trying to call a licensed social worker in who work on call. Sometimes these folks can't get in for 5 or 6 hours, and those beds are being utilized. And especially now in our state of emergency, those ER beds we would love to have freed up for true medical emergencies and allow the behavioral health emergencies to be handled at that lower setting of care.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Senator Wilson, the 12,457 clients that we're talking about here, would the 75, how many of those are alcohol related? Would that saving 75% apply to this group? Or
through the chair, Senator Bishop, we're going to let the department go through their numbers of how some of their average of rate of clients. It's really hard to determine, especially because some of these clients go through 9 different type of provider types as well as being or sort of overutilizers. And so it's hard to say whether they just have alcohol or they could have co-occurring disorders as well, as some of them quite often do.
Thank you.
Please continue.
We'd like to, as you can see, we have a wide variety of stakeholders that have supported our efforts and have joined us. Hospitals, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, we have the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and various others. And we'd like to sincerely thank our stakeholders and presenters that will follow us for their support of Senate Bill 134, which is adding licensed professional counselors to the Medicaid optional services. And we respectfully ask you to join us and support Senate Bill 134. Thank you for your attention this morning.
Do we have any questions before we go to a sectional analysis? Mr. Zeb, if you could walk us through the sectional analysis, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 134, impacts AS 4707.030B, which is medical services to be provided, and AS 4709900, which are definitions under Title 47, Chapter 5, as well as administration of welfare, social services, and institutions. Section 1 covers the Medicaid services to be provided, and this is page 1, lines 4 through 14, and page 2, lines 1 through 9. This expands the Medicaid optional services by including professional counseling services to the list of optional services available through the Department of Health and Social Services under this subsection. Section 2 covers the definitions under AS 47.07.920. That's on page 2, lines 10 through 14. This amends Chapter 7, Medical Assistance for Needy Persons, by adding the definition of professional counseling services. Section 3 covers the medical services to be provided under AS 47.07.030B. That's page 2, lines 15 through 20. That adds professional counseling services to the list of optional Medicaid services available through the Department of Health and Social Services under this subsection. Section 4, Medicaid state plan and federal approval. This is page 2, lines 21 through 29. This amends the uncodified law to instruct the Department of Health and Social Services to submit an amendment to the state plan for medical assistance coverage and seek approval from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In the last section, 5, page 2, lines 30 through 31, and page 3, line 1, provides for a contingent effective date.
Do we have any questions on the sectional? Seeing and hearing none, thank you very much, Senator Wilson and Mr. Zepp. So we have invited testimony on the phone here. First, we have Mr. Al Wall, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. Mr. Wall, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear, yes. Please provide your testimony, and I think that you heard some of the comments. If you want to weave into your conversation about emergency room services, high utilizers with alcohol-related incidences and things of that nature.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Van Imhoff, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Albert Wall. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services for the state of Alaska. We are pleased to work with Senator Wilson on this bill, and including licensed professional counselors as independent Medicaid enrolled providers. As was earlier testified, they can bill Medicaid at this time, but only under the auspices of working in a clinic with supervision from a medical provider that can sign off on their work. That limits the number of licensed professional counselors that are available to actually do work with Medicaid patients across the state, as they currently cannot enroll separately. Many other provider types can. As was mentioned, psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, licensed marriage and family therapists, they all can enroll separately, but licensed professional counselors cannot. In the department's view, this would do a couple of things. It would provide more accessibility for behavioral health care for Alaskans and reduce some of the stress that's currently on the behavioral health care system and the limitations that are on that system. As was mentioned earlier, the need in the emergency rooms, really how the system currently works is we wait often until a person is in absolute crisis and has to go to the emergency room for them to get help. This provision of adding licensed professional counselors as independent practitioners would put more mid-level and preventative care on the street, so to speak, and divert more care from emergency rooms to where it should be being provided at a lower level of care, at a lower cost in their own communities. I do want to go back and mention a few things. I've heard a couple of questions asked this morning, and if you'll indulge me, I'll try to answer a few of those. I heard a question about whether or not private insurance covers licensed professional counselors, and they do, to a point. They will provide LPC coverage, as was mentioned by Senator Wilson. Depending on your care plan, they'll provide a couple of appointments with prior authorization. If they get a medical provider, that is a medical doctor or a DO, to prescribe or refer, then you can get more visits with a counselor. And the parity law on the federal end requires that. But again, they cannot bill Medicaid at this time if they're in private practice. I also wanted to make comment on the super utilizer program. That program we call the care management plan, and it's a plan that does wraparound services on individuals that have the highest number of visits to emergency rooms in the greatest need. Those individuals have co-occurring or complex medical conditions with behavioral health, so that is the population that program is focused on. And I wanted to also mention, before I took questions, the 1115 waiver. This proposed legislation is an important piece of rolling out coverage for the 1115 waiver. There are, as you are aware, a number of pieces of legislation moving this year that have to do with that 1115 waiver. As the phases are implemented, the first phase that has been implemented is the substance abuse phase. The substance abuse providers, many of those are licensed professional counselors. And then the second phase is being implemented July 1st, and that will have a number of new services that will need more provider types to fill those services. And again, just basically the 1115 waiver is an effort to move the level of acuity on an average down. That will drive costs down, it will put more care on the street, and it will keep individuals in community and out of the hospitals as they should be. So with that, I'm prepared to take questions.
We have two questions. We have Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The presenter provided us with slide number 11 as an analysis of potential savings. Not all will be realized, but I wonder if you might comment upon that slide.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, unfortunately, though I can see you on the screen, I cannot see the slide. However, I believe I've seen that slide before in a previous presentation. And I will speak generally to the savings and not address the numbers specifically as I can't see them. We do anticipate savings through the ability for licensed professional counselors to enroll independently as providers of Medicaid services. And again, how that works is right now, if you're a Medicaid recipient and you need to see a counselor, as was mentioned, often it's difficult to find appointments with those individuals, counselors, just because of the scale, the number of people that need the appointment. So if you put more providers out there that you're able to go see, then there's better accessibility, and you don't wait until you're in an emergent situation to go into the emergency room before you get the help that you need. So it will drive the cost down overall. It has been proven to do so in other states that it's been implemented. We just need more accessibility to that care at a lower level than at a higher level.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. So the number one group, I guess, of people who come in with more than 10 visits is for alcohol abuse. How is that typically handled when they go to the emergency room? What is it, just kind of used as a sleep-off place?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, it depends on which hospital you're in, because some hospitals do have an adjacent substance abuse program. For instance, Bartlett Regional has the Rainforest. Out in Bethel, they have a sleep-off center, a sobering center. So it depends on which hospital you're in. But generally speaking, hospitals will, if a person is at a dangerous level of intoxication, that is, they need some sort of medical observation during their detox, they will keep them in the ER and observe them. If there is a detox bed available, and of course, we don't have enough in the state, but if there's a detox bed available and they can get them in, they'll transfer them to the detox center. But right now, a vast majority of those are detoxed in the ER, unfortunately. And I need to point out something that there is a big difference between detoxification, obviously, and ongoing therapy. Licensed professional counselors don't technically do the detoxification process. That's done by a medical professional, a nurse or a doctor that can administer drugs in an emergent situation and so on and so forth. LPCs are those individuals that see a patient on an ongoing basis, sometimes three times a week, sometimes two times a week, whatever the necessary meetings are, in order to keep them stable and not using and keep them clean. So a licensed professional counselor is the individual who does the actual therapy work and preventative work that keeps individuals out of the ER in the first place.
Senator Wilkowski.
So is this going to provide the hospitals with the tools they need to help break the cycle of alcohol abuse and opioid abuse, drug abuse? Or is there something more that needs to be added to this?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I believe it's a good step in the right direction. It is not a panacea. It's not a silver bullet. However, I do know that it will help. In other states where this has been implemented and there is better accessibility to care at a lower level, it certainly takes detox out of the ERs to some extent. The real answer to your question, if I can just be quite bold, the real answer to your question is we need to address this culturally and as Alaskans as a whole, as a nation. It's a huge issue. It's part of the fabric of who we are as a people, and alcohol still kills more people than, you know, a number of other problems do combined in our state and in our nation. And it is a societal issue that needs to be addressed. Yes, licensed professional counselors will certainly help in that regard, but we as a people need to address this issue as a whole.
Senator Stedman, did you have a question at all? No. Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The licensed professional counselors, how many do you anticipate will be needed, and are they available to fill the positions if the funding is there?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair. So that's a great question. Right now, I believe there's upwards of about 700 LPCs that are licensed in the state. I think that number was on a slide earlier Mr. Zepp showed. And I will reiterate that a number of those are currently working in community health centers. And so they are billing Medicaid, but there's not very many of them. I'm not going to hazard a guess, but if there's 26, 30 of those community health centers across the state, I would anticipate that about half of them have some sort of behavioral health care. I know five of those are grantees of the state, and so they have licensed professional counselors doing work. But again, it's a very small number. One of the other barriers that's going to happen that will reduce the number of licensed professional counselors that want to be independently enrolled providers is just the administrative work of billing Medicaid. And I mention that because I think we should be realistic about how many of these LPCs are going to be willing to enroll as Medicaid providers. I don't anticipate that all 700 of them are going to line up tomorrow and, enroll. I think that a number of those will weigh the odds of what the administrative burden is, just like their medical counterparts, by the way. Not all doctors obviously accept Medicaid, and that's their choice. And I think LPCs are going to be in the same boat. So some will, some won't. I do think that it will address an accessibility need in the state. I think your question is this enough, and how many will? The bottom line question to that is, or answer to that is, I honestly don't know, sir. I hope that it will increase accessibility to a point where we can turn the tide on some of these real serious issues like alcoholism and suicide. But I'm not sure it's a question of enough. I think once the 1115 gets implemented and there are different types of service that can be billed and different types of service providers like LPCs that can bill those services, we begin to have the tools that we can ratchet down the level of acuity in this state and, again, hopefully keep people out of, inpatient psychiatric care and out of detox, to a greater extent than we do now.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Wall. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little bit off topic, but it's right in front of us. Still the number one reason that people go to the emergency department is acute upper respiratory infections, flus, colds, things like that. I'm just curious what sort of efforts the department is taking to educate people about the importance of just kind of the basic hand washing and social distancing and things like that.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, if you're referring to the efforts around the virus,
I'm just overall that is by far the number one reason people go to the emergency room according to this document, and just in terms of educating the Medicaid population that, you know, we're all trying to figure out how to bend this cost curve, and that seems like kind of a low-hanging fruit.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, absolutely. I'll tell you that we do that in a couple of different ways. I know that every time you go or I go to a doctor, you see the signage up around, and the folks at the doctor's office always talk to me about it, at least if I go in. I will say that the public health division does a tremendous job of kind of that preventative address to Alaskans as a whole. They do that in a couple of different ways. They do that through signage. They do that through advertisements. They do that through messaging, specifically through radio and through print. We as providers are all trained to interact in a preventative way with their patients. And so that is part of the training they receive. Some of that comes from state of Alaska funding, some of that's through federal funding, but there's a multi-level effort to address preventative care, which is kind of what we're talking about here.
So thank you. On that note, generally to have an entire cultural shift of an entire state, community, nation, you generally need to have a catalyst. I believe that COVID-19 could very well be that catalyst. It just so happens that the common flu is also the top reason that you pointed out for coming into ER or seeking medical treatment. When we look at other countries and how they're handling COVID, we're looking at Singapore that has bent the curve a lot more successfully than other countries. Reading information, they're discussing lessons learned with SARS and that they have a more robust and national response due to the current memory, and they were hard hit, and those memories have not faded. I suspect, to your point going forward, that rather than just signs in the doctor's office, we will probably see signs everywhere for the foreseeable future, and not just the next 4 to 6 months. We're talking to the next 4 to 6 years to even beyond that. So you bring out an important point that perhaps in 2 to 3 years from now, it might be interesting to see how that data may change, because I suspect we will see a cultural shift moving forward for an entire generation. Just my 2 cents. Any further questions for Deputy Commissioner Wall? Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, for staying online. We also have one more invited testimony, and then we do have other testifiers, so please, everyone, stay on the line. We have time. The next invited testifier is Jared Cosen, President and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Association. Mr. Cosen, can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you okay. Just state your name for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Of course, my pleasure. My name is Jared Cosen, and I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. And as you can probably imagine, I've been listening in to all the testimony so far and the presentation on the bill, but I've also been on phone calls and meetings all morning before that, coordinating with all of our hospitals and physicians on the COVID-19 event. So I wanted to put that out there because I know when we're talking about a bill like this, when there's something far more pressing at hand, sometimes you know, it's hard to give something the priority it deserves. And this bill is a priority, and it does deserve attention. I'm glad you guys are doing this. We think it is absolutely reasonable to believe that if more counselors are willing and able to see Medicaid patients, Alaska's continuum of care for behavioral health will be in a better place. I mean, this is very obvious to everybody. When there's a void in crucial community-level services, patients are left with one place to turn, and it's a hospital emergency room. I've said this many times on record. Hospitals are the most expensive point of care in the continuum, and it's for good reason. We offer the most advanced medical services in the world, and we are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the entire year, always staffed, and we will not turn anyone away. However, as you can imagine, it's better for the patient, and it's better for us, physicians, care providers, if people receive care at the correct level. Everybody constantly talks about how do we lower the cost of care? What's the best approach? This is the approach. You invest in the continuum at the community level services and reserve the higher level, the more expensive setting, for those that actually need it. So a couple questions were asked, and I'm, of course, happy to take any questions, but you know, someone asked, will this give hospitals the tools to address the problem? It will do two things, and most certainly it will give hospitals the tools to address the problem by being able to have this type of counselor on staff, you know, meeting patient needs. But even more importantly, it's going to provide an environment outside of the hospital for people to receive these services. So something that comes to mind for me anecdotally is when we have people in the hospital and in the emergency room in particular, and we're looking to do a discharge, this population that's struggling with these behavioral health issues often come right back to us. So if there is a sustainable place in the community that you can discharge to, that someone has the chance to receive kind of longer-term recovery in a community setting, that's better for everybody. It keeps those hospital beds open, keeps the emergency room flowing, and more importantly, it allows the patient to have a chance to get the services they need at a far lower cost for everybody, including Alaska Medicaid. I guess the last thing I want to say in closing before I'm available for any questions is I thought about this. I used to work at Matthew Regional. I saw it firsthand, and this bill is very smart public policy, and it's smart fiscal policy because the cost avoidance that will come from this would be significant, in my opinion. But I was talking to a CEO in a rural hospital, and I didn't know, is behavioral health still, you know, what's the pulse on it? Is it still affecting our facilities? Is it still top of mind for them? And just 2 weeks ago when I talked to this CEO, he said it was the most pressing issue at his facility. And he said, if this bill cannot get passed, then all hope is lost, and we know where everybody stands on behavioral health. This is a basic step that can have a very real impact, and it's a basic step that we have to take. So with that said, if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them, and the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association and all of our facilities absolutely support this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Kosin, for your very honest and clear testimony. Do we have any questions for Mr. Kosin? Thank you, Mr. Kosin. Thank you very much. And we are now going to open public testimony on SB 134. We have about 7 or 8 people online. I'm just going to go in order of when people signed up, and everyone is off net. Please limit your testimony to about 2 minutes, please. We have Mr. John Zestada, Alaska Primary Care Association, followed by Melissa Hill. So, Mr. Zestada.
Good morning, committee co-chair Stedman and Von Imhoff and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Zestada, and I'm the policy director at the Alaska Primary Care Association. our 27 federally qualified health centers support SB 134 and are actively supporting its passage. Adding Medicaid reimbursement for LPCs has been a top priority in our efforts to expand access to behavioral health services for many years. CHCs are already using LPCs in their practices to provide school-based services, individual counseling services, substance abuse disorder treatment, and in supporting care coordination activities. And this does include coaching on basic health and hygiene issues, such as we are addressing right now. However, these services by these providers are not reimbursable. They are paid through other earned income, federal and private grants. This is absolutely not sustainable. Federally qualified health centers have received considerable federal investment to expand behavioral health services and substance abuse treatment services in the primary care setting. They are required to provide behavioral health care integrated with medical, dental, pharmacy, and other services. Adding LPCs to the roster of billable providers enables health centers to make their service expansion sustainable. This is a national best practice. LPCs are a valuable, cost-effective component of team-based, whole-person primary care. Whole-person primary care in community health centers is built around medical, dental, behavioral, pharmacy, and support providers working together to ensure patients get all the care they need and supporting them in the management of their health and chronic conditions and helping them to avoid acute and emergent situations. With that, I'll let others speak, and again, we thank you for considering this bill and are wholeheartedly supportive.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Melissa Hill.
Good morning, Co-Chair Von Imhoff. I was only online to help answer questions as it related to the fiscal note. I don't have public testimony.
Okay, Ms. Hill, we will keep you in the queue for when we go on the fiscal note. So thank you for staying online. Okay, we have next Jennifer Moreau Johnson. She is up for questions, but Ms. Johnson, Moreau Johnson, do you have any comments?
Hi, thank you for the record. This is Jennifer Moreau with the Division of Behavioral Health. Thank you, Chair Von Imhoff. I also am available for questions.
Okay. I think that's probably the same with Mr. Rick Calcote, Division of Behavioral Health. Do you have any thoughts you want to share with us, or are you just available for questions?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. Available for questions. Okay. All right. Next up, we have Jocelyn Pemberton.
Yes, this is Jocelyn Pemberton. I'm the CEO for the Alaska Hospitalist Group and wanted to just lend my voice. We are a large private practice seeing patients in the hospitals across Alaska. Little less than 100 physicians in our practice. And I wanted to lend my voice to this cause. It's something that is near and dear to my heart. Part of the issue I see is, this regulation of needing a medical provider to oversee a licensed professional counselor in order to provide therapy just from a pure training and modality perspective does not make a whole lot of sense and really restricts access for our Medicaid population. It is not a requirement that any of the other insurance companies have in place because the objective is to get these individuals, therapeutic help. I think from a behavioral health medical support, many of the Medicaid recipients are plugged in or can be plugged in to either psychiatrist or nurse practitioner, psych nurse practitioners in order for prescribing for their behavioral health medications. And so to have this additional restriction really does limit access from a therapeutic perspective. And, as I'm sure we all know, therapy can go a very long way, probably further than any type of medication as far as improving somebody's behavioral health situation. So just wanted to lend my voice to that. I can stay on available for questions or sign off.
Thank you, Ms. Pemberton. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Prentice Pemberton, Counseling Solution of Alaska.
Hello, good morning. It's interesting following my wife. There is a relationship there. My name is Prentice Pemberton. I'm, along with my partner, Kate Lane, the owner of Counseling Solutions of Alaska. Counseling Solutions of Alaska employs 20-plus therapists in Anchorage and Eagle River, none of whom can provide therapy services to Medicaid recipients because we do not employ a psychiatrist. Throughout the 25 years of my time in Alaska, the constant problem that that teens and families have been facing is accessing quality outpatient services. The primary barrier to accessing these needed services is the requirement that a psychiatrist provide supervision in order for an LPC or LCSW to provide counseling services. I heard, I believe it's Dr. Wall mentioned that LCSWs can apply for to see Medicaid, but I was not aware of that. I hear a lot of talk today about substance abuse, and that can't be really our primary focus. The focus needs to be their kids, supporting families before they get into crisis. Ongoing counseling will provide stability and support for families to keep them out of crisis. Having kids and teens waiting 6, 12, or 18 months because they're on Medicaid is not serving their needs. As it now stands, the only families who can access services are private insurance or the financial means to pay privately out of pocket, which not many people can do. Access to mental health services for Alaska kids should not be based on short-term economics. I really do think that opening up LPCs and LCSWs would reduce much of the backlog and see kids before they end up in hospitals, sent out of state to treatment. Acute hospitalizations, emergency room visits have been talked about a lot. I think we have to do better for the kids of Alaska, and I think long-term it will pay absolute dividends in savings from correctional savings and ER visits and hospitalizations. So I appreciate the time. I appreciate everybody being here to talk about this. It's an important issue. Had a difficult time, as many have mentioned, so thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have online Jennifer Morton, licensed professional counselor.
Hello. My name is Jennifer Morton. I'm a licensed professional counselor out in Nome, Alaska. For the last 8 years, I have been working in very rural locations. In Dillingham, we served 20-some-odd villages all the way from the bottom of the peninsula, of the Aleutian Peninsula, all the way over to Good News Bay. And in Nome, we served 16 villages in that area. And what I got to say is, first of all, when we talk about, I have a lot to say, but actually, the primary issue out here in Alaska, and I have been on the rapid response team. I have been the one that has been sent out to villages when there's a suicide to deal with the villages and to deal with the responders and to deal with the family. And I have been an EMT and firefighter. I've really invested a lot of time and effort into this. And there are several issues that I see. Number one, there is only one option, and that's the community mental health center. And those are run by the hospitals out here, the health organizations. And a lot of them do not, a lot of the public does not trust them. And I'm not saying that they're not effective, but with good recourse. I mean, they're, for a lot of them, they can get licensed professional counselors to come out here by offering incentive programs, but they generally last maybe a year or two, and then they leave. And then the clients who often have issues with abandonment are now abandoned again, and they got to start with somebody new. Or they're staffing with professional counselors, or they're staffing with interns who are not up to snuff, who take time to get up to snuff, and then they leave in a year. That is a major problem. It is so important in rural Alaska that you have a connection with people and that you are invested in the community. They look at that incredibly closely, and if you're not, they will not seek services. And in my case, I left behavioral health. I took a big risk. I left behavioral health, and I opened up a private practice because I have a specialization in art therapy, which is incredibly culturally relevant, and I wanted to be able to provide that to the community. Now, I can only bill people with Blue Cross Blue Shield and Aetna. And the problem with that is that those are the people that are employed. The people that really need the help are the people that are low income, underemployed, unemployed, that have Medicaid options. And I get calls every single day, people begging to be part of this art therapy thing.
Ms. Morton, can you please summarize your comments, please? Your time is well over 2 minutes.
Oh, sorry. It's so important to be able to provide these services, and it does keep people out of the emergency room because we're not going from crisis to crisis to crisis to crisis. We're going from absolute support and encouragement from people who are vested in this community to prevent the crisis in the first place.
Thank you. Can you tell us whether you're in support of the bill or not?
Absolutely in support of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Morton, for your testimony. Next up, we've got Vicki Jo Kennedy online. Vicki Jo, whenever you're ready.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. My name is Vicki Jo Kennedy, and I'm still here in Juneau. And I just want to thank the smartest Senate Finance Committee in the country, I believe. And, yes, I did comment on this in subcommittee as well. I'm in total support of Bill 134. And it is a big issue in our state, and I think we all know it. I am also a victim of it, you know. So we do need to support this bill, and I know you'll find a way to do it. I have also talked to DHFS about some of the way the coverage is extended, and we need to absolutely make people be in this state at least 30 days before they can fly in or walk in or boat in. The minute they step into this state, they can go to a hospital and start getting services under the Medicaid. Now, that needs to come to an abrupt halt. They are coming in here, and I know this firsthand because I've witnessed it, and getting services and then flying out of here as soon as their services are done because it's all over the kids' social network things. They've showed it to me. But we do need the mental health and the substance abuse. So I am in support of this bill, and I thank you. We'll find solutions, and I know you guys can do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki Jo. Appreciate your testimony. Seeing no one else online, there is one more person online. Okay, you're going to add that person in. Okay, we're just going to hold for a second. Okay, we have Laura Porter. Ms. Porter, if you would state your name for the record and begin when you're ready.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Laura Porter, and I'm a licensed professional counselor in Palmer. And I was just calling in to elicit support for this bill for SB 134. And it's been my experience working in the state the last couple of years that there's a huge need, and a large portion of our population, as you guys know, are on Medicaid. I am subcontracted with a children's advocacy center, and fortunately they have grant funds to send some of their Denali KidCare clients to me, and I get to work with them in that respect. But I get calls weekly, and it is really, really hard for me to have to turn people away who are in need of services. And I try and provide what I call holistic mental health services. I'm certified in equine therapy and brain spotting, and these are some really tried and true methods that can help people. And I am also very willing to, because I'm in private practice, I do my own billing anyway. So I'm one of the people who's willing to take on the administrative side to bill Medicaid. So if you guys have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, we have Senator Wilson.
Thank you for coming on testifying, but can you explain a child advocacy center? I'm not sure if everyone understands what that is.
So the Children's Advocacy Center in the Valley, for example, is called the Children's Place, and it's the organization that will do kind of the OCS investigations, mostly for children who've been abused and neglected or have some sexual assault.
Okay. Is there any further questions for Ms. Porter? Thank you, Ms. Porter, for your testimony. Do we have anyone else online? Nope. And we have no one in the room. So public testimony is closed. So we have folks online for further questions or discussion. We have Melissa Hill, Administrative Operations Manager, Division of Health and Social Services, Jennifer Moreau Johnson, Director of Division of Behavioral Health, Rick, is it Calcote? Calcote, Division of Behavioral Health. Do we have any questions at all by committee members? Any further discussion for the bill sponsor?
Actually, Madam Chairman, I do have a question.
Yes.
If, and it's probably for the bill sponsor, if this bill is expected to save Medicaid dollars, why is there such a, why is there still a significant fiscal note?
So that would be our next step, is to actually go through the fiscal note. I have actually asked Senator Wilikowski to at least lead us in the initial discussion. Senator Wilikowski, is that okay? OMB component number 3234?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll start with Senator Wilikowski, and then Senator Wilson can chime in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The fiscal note is OMB component number 3234. It is fiscal note number one, published 2/28/2020, and for FY 2021, the fiscal, the proposed expense would be $3,310,300, of which the bulk would be for grants and benefits, and then $55,900 for services, and then there would be an ongoing expense of $3,254,400 in 2022 through 2026. If you flip over to page two, this number is based on the suggestion that there are 717 LP licensed professional counselors in the state of Alaska. They estimate 20% would accept Medicaid patients, which would mean there's that'd be about 143 LPCs accepting Medicaid patients. The estimated number of patients that they would see would be about 20, and the percentage of patients estimated to be Medicaid eligible would be 20%, which means the estimated Medicaid patients seen per week by one counselor at 1 hour each would be 4. The cost to see that per hour is roughly average $118.60. When you do those numbers, you have 143 LPCs times 4 Medicaid patients per week times $118.60 per hour, which is $67,800 weekly estimated weekly incremental cost, which comes out to times 48 weeks, $3,254,400.
Thank you. And Senator Wilikowski, could you also just review the fund sources from the first page?
Yeah, the fund source is estimated 2.385 million for from federal receipts, and then general fund matching would be 14,000, and then general fund mental health UGF would be 911,000. So, and then going out into the future, it'd be roughly the same: 2.34 million in federal receipts, and then 911,000 general fund mental health from UGF.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. So, Senator Olson had a question in regards to why money in the initial years, particularly or any years, in regards to the other slide that we saw that showed a significant cost savings potentially from the shift of going from MDs to LPCs. So, Senator Wilson.
I can take a general stab at this. We've been working with the department on this and sort of looking at it. And then the majority of the costs will be covered by the Fed receipts through Medicaid reimbursement. But it through the 1115 waiver, it's really hard to disperse the cost savings, and you can't state, you know, for one user group. We talked with the actuarial folks as well, and you can't say an LPC provider code. You can't pull that out of whether if it was a licensed marriage family therapist that billed, or if it was an LCSW who bill that CPT code, and it'd be really hard to prove out that cost savings measure within just one provider type. And since these providers, these clients go through multiple providers within the waiver program, you can't double dip in your cost savings measures. And so it's really hard to sparse that out when you have to show those numbers out. It's very frustrating, to say the least, to see a note like this, but we understand that we have the potential for cost savings, but the department, they can't double dip in their cost saving numbers with their 1115 waiver.
Madam Chair, if I could continue, it looks like it's an ongoing, that you're going to need almost $1 million every year. Do you anticipate that number changing?
I do.
Higher or lower?
Hopefully lower. I mean, that's the goal, is to increase the access at a lower utilization of care.
It's optimistic. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I think that what we heard earlier is that we will be, the intent of the bill is to shift care for some patients where it's appropriate from other medical providers to LPCs. Rather than estimated annual increment costs, I won't go there. The issue is any savings should be looked at. I've said earlier, savings by 1,000 cuts. If it doesn't reach a certain threshold of $1 million or whatever it may be, that's okay. Let's just see what it looks like over time. The system may take a year or so to get up to speed as well. And I think there's been conversations here around this table. Is this enough? What other things can we do? This could be a start. Maybe there's other sleep-off centers and things of that nature that may come about in subsequent years. But to your point, Senator Olson, I think it is difficult, or the department is hesitant to identify the savings at this point until they materialize. Senator Wilikowski.
I'm just curious if Mr. Wall is still on the line, if we could hear from him. I thought he testified that he expected savings, and I'd just be curious to hear from him what his testimony is on that.
Deputy Commissioner Wall, are you still online, and did you hear the question from Senator Wilikowski? He is not, but who was available for?
Madam Chair, if I could. I think Ms. Jennifer Monroe might be able to talk about.
So, Ms. Jennifer Monroe Johnson, are you online, and can you comment about the fiscal note?
Hi. For the record, this is Jennifer Monroe with the Division of Behavioral Health. Thank you, Chair Von Imhoff, and I'm just checking to make sure you can hear me.
We can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilson described it accurately. I think what you're seeing is an abundance of caution, because we have multiple initiatives throughout the department, and notably the Section 1115 waiver is an initiative that is counting on savings by reduction of usage of the emergency room. So at some point we became concerned that we would have a duplicated count. So as Senator Wilson described, an individual can only not show up in the emergency room so many times to be counted as a savings. So while there's a fiscal note attached to this, there's a cost attached to this. The other part of that equation, which we do believe to be true, is that that is a smaller cost than the emergency room. The hesitation on the part of the department was to get in a situation where we would be counting the same individual not showing up in the emergency room across the multiple provider types. Does that help?
Senator Wilikowski.
What does the average person that you expect you obviously expect to cut some emergency room visits, and what's the average cost of each one of those visits that you expect to save?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, that I believe there is a report that has been submitted to Senator Wilson's office. If not, we can get that to you, and that would be, let me pull it up here. That would be the LPC ER savings estimate. If that's not available through Senator Wilson's office, I would be happy to get that to you. That was determined through our actuaries.
Thank you. If you could get that for the committee, that would be helpful, please. Do we have any further questions about the fiscal note? Seeing none, thank you. Ms. Moreau, appreciate your comments here. So we will set Senate Bill 135 aside at this time. Please contact my office as soon as possible about any concerns or amendments.
134.
What did I say? Don't. Senate Bill 134, I'm sorry. This concludes today's meeting. We have a meeting scheduled for this afternoon, which will be canceled. Tomorrow we will hear HB 122, Funter Bay Marine Park. We will be adding bills previously heard to the schedule when they are ready. I will let offices know as soon as the schedule is finalized. We are adjourned.